you're just talking about 1958 moving up to San Francisco. Man, this is, Lou has a job up there?
Yes, he was working for the USCD and...
Were you maintaining residence in both places?
Yes.
So you still were part of the...
Yes, I didn't... I was on the state committee and I... I came back one weekend here, and while I was here, I got a phone call from one of the labor, Haggerty was his name, who was head of the Central Labor Council in Los Angeles, and he said that the AFL-CIO, they had that labor issue on the ballot, I think, against Taft Hartley or something, and they were... really right-to-work law it was,
mm-hmm.
and they wanted, he said that they were opening up some headquarters in the southwest area, and so he wanted to know if I could recommend somebody to take charge and open up the headquarters. So he said, I'd think about it. Then I called up Lou, and I said, would you care if I stayed down here? For a while, and he said, what for? So I told him, and anyway, I called him back the next day and said, yes, I can recommend somebody, I'll take the job. And so he said, oh, he said, that's great. And that's I got paid in the Douglas campaign when I was in the Roslyn Hotel, and then I got money on this job, but it was from the AFL-CIO.
I think you mentioned something about this to me before, where you had both this office and you also ran a campaign?
The campaign of Cranston and Stanley Mosk, but I opened up headquarters in Bell and in Torrance and in Redondo, and I persuaded they were going to have it just on this proposition, right to work, and I said, well, why on earth don't you have it for the Democratic Party? You've endorsed all of them,
mm-hmm.
and so I got free headquarters. And they paid for an office girl in all these headquarters, and they couldn't do it for the congressman, because
mm-hmm.
that's against some
federal law.
Mm-hmm. But they could do it for the assembly candidate.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, Tom Griffin was elected here,
mm-hmm.
and he ran before and didn't get, but he ran this time in 58, and he got the nomination.
So you convinced the AFL-CIO
to let the assembly candidates move in.
Okay, but the assembly candidates then didn't have to pay.
The rent, and they had an office girl,
uh-huh.
and they also paid for the sign. They put Tom Griffin for assembly, then yes on 14 or whatever it was, and so all these districts, about 12. Towns from Redondo, Torrance, Bell, and we got real nice headquarters, and we had a paid girl in each one.
Who was this that originally contacted you from that?
Well, Haggerty was his name,
uh-huh.
from the AFL-CIO, Central Labor Council.
Mm-hmm. And did he know about you?
Well, he'd always known me at meetings and the like, but mm-hmm. he just didn't know.
So he'd worked in the party.
Yeah, and he didn't have any idea that I'd work at it, do it.
Mm-hmm.
But, that was that fall, you were so hot, it was 112, we had all those Santa Ana winds here, but I had... my sister-in-law's car, she had a nice little Chevy. We sold both our cars. We had two Pontiacs and went up to San Francisco. But anyway, we had such a good campaign that year, because in the fall we won.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was because the AFL let the Democrats come in. We used Brown, too, and had it for the headquarters, and we really won in the whole state. And I think
when you were paid for this,
yeah, I was paid
something like a part time.
No, I worked full time, and I had to. I went to all the headquarters, made a trip about every day, and I made a tour on each one.
Every day you drove from.
Oh, I made a great big circle to Torrance, to Redondo, to Manhattan Beach, and to what's that town where all the. Gambling is over
Gardena.
Here. Gardena. We had nice headquarters in Gardena. I've got pictures of them all. I'll bring
mm-hmm.
them out sometime and show them to you.
So you traveled all of these places, and they paid for you to
they
be supervising all
Yeah, things. And they paid for the headquarters
mm-hmm.
themselves, and they paid for a girl in the office, and they paid for the signs.
Were the wages you were getting something like regular office work wages?
Well, it was $125 a week, mm-hmm. and then they paid me mileage on my car. So that wasn't very much.
Not
but,
for
but I thought it was real great.
It was, at least
that. But we really won the state then. Then the next, when we moved to San Francisco, I was so, of course it was all politics then, and I didn't contact too many until after I got back and after we had won.
Mm-hmm.
And Cranston won big, it was his first year for controller.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, there was the nicest young fellow by the name of Buzz Davidson, who worked so hard in our campaigns here when he was in high school. His father was, he lived in the Bixby Knowles area, and he'd come down at our headquarters in the breakers and get precinct lists and precinct material and go out every night and work the precinct after school. And
mm-hmm.
finally, I said to him, I said, Buzz, don't you ever have the use of a car? Because I thought he always took the bus. And so he said, oh, yes, he said, but he said, I'm not 16 yet. Can't get a driver's license. And I thought, well, he was so intelligent and so wonderful. I just loved that kid. And he had another little girl from Polly, from Woodrow Wilson. They were the head of the Young Democrats for Stevenson that I had appointed them. He was a great musician. He just was about everything. Well, anyway, he wrote, he was going to Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was home that summer, I tried to contact him, but I think he was back east of school then. And so there was he wrote for something, an article about Stevenson. This must have been in 59. And so there was so much, they just loved Stevenson up there. And a fellow that had a big insurance, Prudential Insurance or some big insurance agency, and I don't think it was Prudential, I think it was General Insurance in Berkeley. And he, with a bunch of other fellows, were thinking of starting a Stevenson campaign. And so he saw this article. And so he called him up and went to see him. And he tried to get him to work in the Stevenson campaign. And he said that he was just snowed under with studies and he couldn't do it, but he said the last time I was in Long Beach, he said, I heard of a woman that moved to San Francisco, and I know if you found her that she'd just give full time for Stevenson for nothing. Well, anyway, poor old he said, well, where will I find her? And says, well, I don't know, I have any idea, but if you called the Democratic headquarters in San Francisco, well, I bet they'd know where she is.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, this John McElhinney called the next day, and I answered the phone.
I think you've told me.
I told you that, but I don't think you put it on tape, did you?
I'm not sure, because I haven't reviewed the one that may have had it on. I think you mentioned that you answered the phone, and then you put the ad in the paper.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So then we started the Stevenson campaign there, and in 59, and oh my, we worked so hard.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I did tell you this, because I think I gave you that picture of first Stevenson, but oh my, we worked so hard for Stevenson. Then
in the middle of all of a sudden, it was Stevenson becoming defeated in spite of all the grassroots movement. Do you ever get the politics and these kind of things just too frustrating?
Well, I worked so long and on For Losers that in 58 when we won, I just couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
That we won. we won, so because we just never won.
So what would keep you coming back then if you kept losing? Do you think is it just
well? I just felt that we absolutely would win someday. I know when I first came down here, Mr. Liu was a Republican. All the Remleys were Republican. His father was on the Republican State Central Committee of Missouri for 20 years, and he was a postmaster in Columbia, Missouri, whenever the Republicans were in power. And when he first came down here, he lived in Carlsbad, and he registered Republican, and he says, well, you said you might as well register Republican or you'd never have any say in anything. And I registered Republican, and, you know, I just couldn't sleep, and it was in this little town of Carlsbad, and so finally I said, well, if every Democrat that comes out here follows that reasoning, they'll never build up the Democratic Party. So I went down to San Diego before, because that's where the city
the
hall,
county,
the county is, the Carlsbad's in San Diego County, and changed my registration. I said I just got to begin somewhere building up the Democrats.
So
my first registration, that's my black mark, was a Republican, but it might not my first vote out here.
Did Lou ever, did he end up, I mean, did he who went with you to dinner with Humphrey, I mean, and in the face of all of your party work, did he change registration, or did he?
I don't know whether you ever, he says that Hoover changed him. I don't know. I always said I changed him, but he said I didn't. He said it was Hoover. But I know that I worked on the election board in Alhambra, and we had we had a write-in candidate for something. I think it was for senator, and we didn't. I don't know what it was, but anyway, he wrote in. Somebody that I didn't like, he wrote in a Republican, because I could tell his handwriting, and so, oh, I just raved and ranted to him, why would he vote for him, and he said, election was small, he was so mad, he said it was supposed to be private, but I could tell his handwriting. But you know, people are so funny. We had one other time, this was years ago in Alhambra, we had for the county committee, it was vote for 7, and there were only 6 on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody didn't qualify or get their names in time or anything, so we wanted a Mary Russell. We called up, so many people, called up so many friends, and so anyway, the day before election, I called up everybody I knew real well on our street to write in Mary Russell,
mm-hmm.
and they all promised me they would. And so it was so funny on when we counted the ballots. There were about 8 Lillian Russell. She was an old time actress, and they you know, people just aren't interested in politics, and they thought, oh, she told me to write in somebody. I think it was, so they wrote Lillian Russell. So we had to throw the name out. Wasn't any vote.
But did Lou eventually become active in Democratic Party politics? Or did
he liked to go to hear good talks and the like, but he never did much work.
Mm-hmm.
I know after we first come down here, I had, this Bayshore Democratic Club was, I think we had about 100 PhDs that were in it, they were all practically professors at state and city college, or teachers, mm-hmm. that belonged to it. But I had them all here night after night. We were writing every Democrat on precinct cards. We didn't have the nice list then,
mm-hmm.
and they were alphabetical, and you could only buy them just before election. So we'd take the last, and we had to put them in order up and down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And I had them all in the bedroom and up on the steps and all over writing, but he wouldn't do it. We did that. And I never worked so hard in all my life as I did in San Francisco that fall when Griffin was running for the assembly here. And I wrote the whole of Long Beach that was in this 70th Assembly District at that time, I typed Dupla stickers for. Then I had somebody there that would take them down here, and I had a regular process. I had 4 sets of Dupla stickers for all the mailings for all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I typed about 3 or 4 hours every night till I got all those Dupla stickers typed. Helen Potipan did Lakewood,
mm-hmm.
and I did all of Long Beach. Boy, that was a job.
Did he?
Maybe
all that not to win.
No, I didn't win.
Do you ever feel like at that point, I mean, if I had been up every night, I think I'd be kind of frustrated.
Oh, I was, so. But then you just couldn't help it. We just won more each time.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope to goodness.
So you felt that you were building up the party?
We were building up. Now, to think, of course, we never would have won in this district if they had to run against incumbents, but it's so great to have Hannaford. And but the 60 campaign, I came down, and we took over the whole Paramount Theater building, and it was vacant for the Stevenson campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And we got the biggest campaign sign that ever was. It was right across from the Biltmore, across from Pershing Square there in L.A. And, oh, goodness, I got a little hotel right across from the Biltmore. And I think I worked about 20 hours a day. I can remember
you rented a hotel room?
Where I lived.
Uh-huh.
But then there was a school teacher here who was a real old tough gal who was very much for Stevenson. And there was the store downstairs that we sold Stevenson stuff. And, I didn't like the Stevenson gang that was from New York. They just weren't letting, we were the head out here, but they weren't, they tried to take over.
So when Stevenson came, Stevenson was running
for president in
60, and this is before the primary.
Before the convention.
Okay, and he's brought out people from New York.
Yeah,
And is Lou still living in San Francisco?
Yeah, he was still living in San Francisco, but I came down and stayed there, and and pretty soon our whole campaign came down, and we never worked so hard in our life. And
so
the
Stevenson campaign became centered in L.A.?
Yes.
That there are these people from New York?
Come down, and they weren't going to pay me back my money. I had to put out the money, about $500 for that sign and everything, and they told me that they wired from New York to get it,
mm-hmm.
and that they would pay it. So I had this gal come in, and we opened up this little place downstairs where they sold Stevenson buttons and everything,
mm-hmm.
and I had them made myself in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I knew who to have them done, and they'd air mail them out here, and so I paid myself back.
Mm-hmm.
And they got so mad, and they kept saying that that money should go up there. Boy, they were scared to death of her. Myrtle Putney, Pulteney was her name. And she's since died, but boy, she was a major in the Army, and boy, if she wasn't a tough dame. Oh, she scared them to death. And
was she a regular? It seems that from what you're saying before, there are a lot of people who got interested in Stevenson who hadn't been interested in the party before. Was she one of the party regulars?
No, she was just a good Democrat, but she was just... See, teachers were just crazy about Stevenson, the intellectual. She never really gotten out and worked, but she just delighted in having charge of that downstairs where we sold all Stevenson material.
Mm-hmm.
Myrtle Pulteney, she was just really a great dame. And she took in several $100 a day. And it was really pitiful because people had to vote, the delegates had to vote the way their state went.
Mm-hmm.
And but there were nearly three-fourths of them. They would come over, and they were all for Stevenson. And they would give Stevenson money. They didn't want to vote for Kennedy, but Kennedy won in the primary, and they had to vote for Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you weren't real thrilled with Kennedy?
Well, you know, he wasn't any. He was just an ordinary senator. He hadn't done anything so outstanding as a senator. He was. Young and bright and everything, and I sure worked hard for him after he won, but I don't think he was the person Stevenson was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe anybody. Of course, I think he would have made a great president if he had a chance to, because he really learned fast.
Mm-hmm.
He learned about the CIA. All those things were all planned before he... the Bay of Pigs and all that was all underway before he got in, but he sure learned not to trust them. I think he would have made a great president. But
you felt bad that after all this work, Stevenson was...
I just thought that... But of course, Stevenson didn't come out till the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that was a big mistake, mm-hmm. if he had come out as a candidate in the beginning, because those votes were pledged to Kennedy, and they had to go, although the people themselves were for Stevenson.
Mm-hmm.
And Life magazine took pictures. All if Stevenson had won, they'd have had a big blow up of me in Life magazine with all the work. All that fellow from Life was the nicest guy. He was over there nearly all the time, and I got the head of Abbey Rent. Somebody told me that he was a great friend of Stevenson, but he was out of town. He was sailing to Europe, and I never did figure yet how I could get him by phone on the ship.
Radios, I guess.
I don't know, but I got him, and he furnished us more cots, and we had one floor. Students just poured out mm-hmm. for Stevenson. We had one floor of that Paramount Theater building for boys and another floor for girls. And they slept there, and we barricaded that convention center, or that was the arena there, off of the sports arena mm-hmm. at that time where they had the convention. But they really worked hard, made banners, but it just wasn't in the cards. And I just think the American people were so stupid not to have had Stevenson for president. I just can't conceive of it, to have the chance of having Humphrey and Stevenson and not electing them.
So they ended up with
Ike and Nixon. It's just beyond me.
Well, politics, I guess.
But anyway, we've had very few Democrats in this state. Now, if our little Jerry Brown doesn't get, you know, we've only had three Democratic governors in this century. Brown twice and another Brown once. Isn't that something?
Well, weren't there in the early...
Olson. Culbert Olson in 34.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was defeated in 38 by Goodwin Knight, I think. No, by Merriam.
Yeah.
And he lived in Long Beach. And he was, I think he was.
Continue here. Just find my voice on the tape.
I really got to, Roger Kent was state chairman all the time I worked in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And Jane Morrison was Northern Women's chairman. And she was, she's such a lovely person. And she was, had a big job with the NBC radio there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was in the office all day long, so I did all Jane's work in the daytime.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked awfully hard for different campaigns, and that's where I first got to know George Moscone,
mm-hmm.
who was running for state senator, at that time, and assembly first, and he didn't make it. Then he... next time he ran for state senator. Did I tell you about how I gave him a slogan that he said that won for him? We were at a meeting when he was first running, and he got the young Democrats were all for him, but it's and they were out campaigning, and they had such a hard time making contacts, because San Francisco is sort of hard, with so many apartment houses and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I asked them how much money they had for gimmicks, and so anyway, I suggested that they get combs. I thought I told you that.
I think you did.
And they got just thousands of little combs, and with a Moscone for Senate, and they wrote on it. So the kids, when they went out, they said, "I'm combing the district for votes for Moscone." And he said that gave them access to anybody, whether they were women or bald-headed or... So he always appreciated that. And I think he's just great, but I think he's having enough. I think he would have enjoyed staying in the Senate more. He's had so much turbulence there in San Francisco.
So you were... working at the state central headquarters on Sutter Street then?
212 Sutter.
When you were working with Jane Morrison and mm-hmm. Roger Kent, what was the difference in the sorts of things the two of them would do with her being with the women's division?
Well, she had an awful lot of correspondence that they different districts wanted to put on things and wanted. I had never worked in the headquarters before. I'd always been out in the boondocks in Alhambra and Long Beach. I'd never worked in the LA headquarters ever. I worked when Helen DeHagen Douglas was women's division here when in Alhambra. She was head of the women's division, but we had. Who was this big Democrat? Who was the? They didn't like Helen, and they wouldn't let her use the headquarters, and she had to have her own office. She
even though she was
the women's division chairman, and they had just all kinds of trouble. They just thought she. Let me see, what's his name? Big oil man, and he's donated half the buildings there. Edwin Pauley. Ed Pauley was the state chairman, and. Helen, they didn't like Helen at all because...
Why do you think you didn't?
Well, they were just more conservative and not much different.
Supposedly that she was...
too liberal. And they tried to put out that the Melvin was a communist and all that was during all those turbulent years. But Helen, I think, is one of the greatest women ever lived. Oh, she was so great. But she had to make her own money for her own office and work all herself for a long time. Then I think she was finally accepted after she wasn't accepted while she was an officer in the party. That was after she was a congresswoman. And it's a shame that she still isn't. We lost more candidates we lost more congressmen that wanted to run for Senate. And you see, you can't run for two jobs at the same time. You can, when you're a senator, you can run for a higher job because there's a, like the Duke Mason here, because there's a, their six-year term or four-year term, and you can run in the intervening year. But I really hadn't had too much to do with the downtown headquarters. But the council movement was... anathema with the party, the officials of the party down here, but up there they worked together.
So with down here, was that through like Elizabeth Snyder?
Yeah, they didn't go for the council movement at all, and after they got elected, Jess Unruh, and he started another branch of the party and called it the VIP, Volunteers in Politics, and it didn't last long. And Brown had so much pressure not to pay any attention to the council, but he always did. Of course, the council got awfully radical too. The people that were interested in they were radical for the times, but after their endorsements and their resolutions. And all the paper here, that just how they razzed the council. They just, they were...
The IPT you're talking about?
Yeah. They were, and the people that were in the council were but it got so that no public state office holder would have anything to do with it. So that's when I got our club to get out of it, because I thought, well, when the official party... they wouldn't even go up for endorsement or anything, and so I just thought it was. So when our club got out, we were the backbone of the council because we paid them. We had to pay them $1 a member a year and all that, and so it soon sort of folded.
So when about what time was it that you made that decision? Did
it was in the 60s. But it was seemed so nice up there because. The county committee seemed to be in disrepute up there because if they had any election laws, I'm sure that they had the same ones that we did, but nobody could get elected except the A's or B, because they put them in the alphabetical, and if you weren't A, B, C, or D, or E, you couldn't get elected. So they would have somebody with an A's name run, and then they'd appoint someone else to do their job and all that silly stuff. And I was up to a convention once, and there I saw Dick Cartwright here, and he was a delegate from San Francisco. And I said, "A delegate from San Francisco, and you live here?" And he said, "Oh, well, yes." He said, they appointed me to run as a county committee delegate. Well, it was against the rules, but so the county committee wasn't as strong up there. They didn't go for it as much as they did down here.
Mm-hmm.
But the council was worked right with the state committee,
mm-hmm.
the clubs.
So when you saw the club movement sort of being, well,